This is Phil Farron. And I am driving around. It's Thursday today. It's been a good week at work. This was the exciting week where we upgraded a server. I didn't even watch. I was tangentially monitoring the conversation. But one of the new young men that we had brought onto the team, he's just done a spectacular job learning systems, and he handled most of the update, and it seems to go well at this point. It's been updated and up and running for multiple hours, and people have been using it, and we didn't have any reports of problems when I left. So there you go. So thank you, Jesus. I have a little saying that I use whenever we're launching into, kind of a big thing. I have a little saying. It's, "Oh Lord, bless the work of our hands." And so before I left last night, he had already updated two of our development servers. He got the third one done late yesterday, which was like at 4:30. And he said, "Hey, if you can hop on, check it out." "Sure, I'll do that." So I hopped on, ran it through some paces. It all seemed to be fine. And I said, "It looks, I did this. It all seems to be fine." So they were going to get started at 7:30 this morning. I wasn't sure exactly when I was going to be in. So that was my closing statement to him last night, was, "Oh Lord, bless the work of our hands." So... And he emojied me back, two hands praying. So, but seems like it went fine. So, yay. I had swung by the church just now to help get sound system set up for Sunday. Not going to be able to be doing that too much longer, I think, because small groups are starting back up. And we are having a small group dinner tonight at a fast food restaurant nearby. So instead of going all the way home and coming all the way back, I'm just going to tour around here a little bit in the cemetery. Because the cemetery can be a beautiful place. It's very calm and quiet. So I thought I'd just drive around in the cemetery and do the podcast here. Costumes are fine. Tomorrow is Be an Angel Day, so that has a certain physical demand to it because the mechanical wings are 20 pounds. But on and off this week, I've been carrying around a 20-pound backpack. It's a regular backpack and it has a kettlebell on it that's 20 pounds. So I think I'm ready for that. Tonight, I had already gotten dressed in the costume, made sure that was okay. I had checked the mechanical wings, so tonight I just need to put everything on, make the mechanical wings go up and down a couple of times, and then plug them in, charge them to capacity, and then we'll be ready for tomorrow. I have a 7:15 breakfast, which is good, gives me a couple of extra minutes, but I'll time how long it takes me to get ready tonight, and I have to ask to borrow my wife's van for tomorrow because it's going to be easier than trying to carry those wings around in my car. But I don't think my beloved is doing anything tomorrow morning, so I think we'll be fine. Last year when I did the Be an Angel costume, it was physically demanding, but one of the reasons it was physically demanding was that I had a top, the shirt that I was wearing underneath other things was a faux leather. It was one of those PU leather, faux leather, I don't know. Anyways, and it did not breathe. So by the time I was leaving for the last time, I literally had sweat dripping off my fingertips. And that actually led to a heat rash that I had on my ribs for months and months and months and months. But you know, these are the commitments we make. So to help with that problem, I did buy just a regular shiny athletic top-like thing that is knit and should breathe and should be much, much, much better. So we'll see. We'll see. And I have a vest this type this time instead of a underbust shoulder strap corset. Because I was looking for a specific look, and my wife told me, you know, that's a little too much. Okay, that's fine. So I got myself a vest made out of the same material and fabric and everything, but it's a tuxedo vest is what it is. So we'll wear that tomorrow, which means that it won't be tightened down on my body like the other one was. So that'll give me a little extra breathing room as well. So it will just be fascinating to see how this all goes. But God is good. He helps us through these things. And, you know, we'll go from there. Writing is going fine. I'm doing my read-through, and I've made some adjustments, but I think the book is fine so far. I've got to go back and do one more pass. There's one little plot detail that I've got to confirm that I have it correct. And then also, I'm trying to pay more attention to recaps that I'm doing, because if I'm doing a callback to previous books and it's like 7 books ago, there's no way readers can remember that. I just have to make sure I'm not doing callbacks to think the same callback twice, which I did on the last book, and one of my beta readers pointed that out, and so I went and got that stuff out of there. So I've just got to double check that as I go, make sure I'm not re-summarizing something I've already summarized. So that's all going fine. And then we start on book 20. I did this past week, and I have to be careful how much I say, but maybe at some point I will explain this later on a podcast. I did this week reorient, I think, I'm 99% sure, reorient what is a major aspect of the arc of the book. And it's just really interesting that I can spend all of this time having kind of a hazy understanding of what the major players are and how they'll interact and where they'll end up. And, you know, now that I'm, in essence, 5 books from the end, where I need to make the turn to point myself towards the end, I think Jesus kind of just whispered to me and gave me a way to kind of turn the whole thing, not necessarily upside down, but move it in a direction that is unexpected. But, I mean, I'm hoping that I will move it in a direction that is unexpected, but at the same time recognized as a possible and logical progression of everything I have said before. That's pretty interesting, you know, that I can be going along thinking I'm going one way and then have a whisper that I should turn a different direction and then look back and go, oh, yeah, okay, that will work. In fact, that maybe will fit better for everything I'm doing, even though that's not what I was conceptualizing of while I was doing it. Yeah, so it's interesting. It's interesting. You know, now that we're, and it might even provide me more structure than I was expecting to have through the last 5 books. So, you know, Jesus has helped me write 19 books. He's going to help me write the last 5. Today, I know we've been talking about a lot of things that might be considered conspiracy theories and yada, yada, yada. But this story actually is grist for the mill, as they say, with my windfall books. Because part of what's happening in the windfall books is that I'm dealing with a society that was love, joy, and peace, unless you screw up and then they kill you, but was known for love, joy, peace, and, you know, allowing individuals to express themselves as long as they didn't hurt others. And it's very much moving in the direction of totalitarian regimes where you are required to think a certain way and to act a certain way and to say certain things, whether you believe them or not. And if you don't, you know, then everyone just descends on you. And that environment is going to allow me to do a lot of commentary on our present situation. My book 19 is, in fact, a lot of commentary on how things were handled during the pandemic, because that was COVID-19. I didn't realize that at first. I had already started that direction, and I had a friend go, oh yeah, because it's COVID-19, it's book 19. I was like, oh, I suppose it is. So that's always very interesting. So this is all grist for the mill, but there are specific aspects of this that are grist for the mill. And I'll get to them as we're chatting. So there was an interesting interview that Tucker Carlson did when he interviewed Stephen Sund, S-U-N-D. Stephen Sund was the Capitol Police Chief on January the 6th. And apparently, Tucker Carlson had already done an interview with him, because he has published a book on the events of January 6th. But after he had done this interview with Tucker Carlson, that was at some measure before Tucker Carlson was fired by Fox News. I have no idea if there's any causation there. There is a correlation of some sort, because that was about the same time that Tucker Carlson was also showing footage of the January 6th internal footage of the Capitol that nobody wanted to release until the Republicans got a hold of the House. So Tucker Carlson had done a couple of stories on that, and then he had this interview already recorded. And then in the midst of all that, he was fired from Fox. So whether or not that was just in close proximity and there were other problems, or whether that was a factor in it, whether it was a key factor, who knows? But since Tucker Carlson couldn't get access to that film, that video, he decided he would just re-interview Stephen Sund. And it's a fascinating interview. And it evokes a lot more questions than it answers. So just to kind of set the stage for who Stephen Sund is and what his background is and why we should consider his testimony and why we should listen to what's happening with him. You know what? I think I'm going to park, and I'm going to put my dead kitten filter on this. Sorry, there's going to be some noise. Noise, noise, noise. Hang on a minute. Noise. Am I on? Am I on? Check, check, check. I'm still going. Still going. Oh, oh, oh. Don't drop it. Bonk. There we go. Okay. This way, when I roll down the windows, I won't have to worry about the wind coming in from the side and making things weird on the mic. But anyways, apparently Steven's son was a beat cop, started out on the streets, worked his way up, you know, held a bunch of different posts and stuff, and eventually was appointed to be the Capitol Police Chief for the Capitol Building. And as I said before, was the Capitol Police Chief on January the 6th. So he was in charge of all the Capitol Police that were supposed to defend the Capitol. He has a lot of very, very interesting things to say. The first one being that in the days leading up to January 6th, he was not given intelligence that existed concerning potential threats against police officers, members of Congress, or an attack on the Capitol building. He said, we were told that the January 6th rally would be like prior Trump rallies, and there would be limited skirmishes between Trump supporters and counter-protesters, but that would be about it. He also said that we now know that the Department of Homeland Security, the FBI, and the military had intelligence related to those threats and did not share them with the Capitol Police Intelligence Agency. He said on Sunday and Monday of that week, those organizations had actually been discussing locking down the city because of concerns for violence. And he said, do you know who issues the permits on Capitol Hill for demonstrations? He said, I do, Sun told Carlson. You know who wasn't told? Me. So you've got the guy who's issuing the permits for whether or not people can come to the Capitol and have a demonstration, and for some reason, Department of Homeland Security, the FBI, and the military, even though they had intelligence that concerned them enough to discuss shutting down the city, for some reason, they did not share that. And he said, instead, on January the 4th, what does former acting Defense Secretary Chris Miller do? He puts out a memo restricting the National Guard from carrying the various weapons, any civil disobedience equipment that would be utilized for the very demonstrations or violence that he sees coming. So let's underscore that. The military has intelligence that says this thing's going to turn violent. They may be attacking police officers. They may be attacking members of Congress. They may attack the Capitol. But 2 days before, the defense secretary puts out a memo and he tells the National Guard not to carry various weapons or any civil disobedience equipment that could be used to quell the demonstrations. Okay. Sund also told Carlson that he'd handled several similar events to what happened on January 6th in terms of Trump rallies and supporters and demonstrations and that kind of thing. He said, but January 6th was handled differently by the intelligence agencies. He said, quote, I've done many national security events, and this one was handled differently. No intelligence, no joint intelligence briefing, no coordination, no discussion in advance. It's almost like they wanted it to be watered down, the intelligence to be watered down for some reason. So Sun documents this all in his book. And it's that was released in January of this year, and it was entitled Courage Under Fire, Under Siege and Outnumbered 58-1 on January the 6th. And he says in that book that he requested the assistance of the National Guard 3 days before the rally, but the request was denied. He said that he was denied the request for the National Guard by Lieutenant General Walter Piatt because Piatt did not like the optics of the National Guard on Capitol Hill. So Tucker Carlson, in Tucker Carlson's way, said, well, that sounds like a setup to me. He said, I'm sorry, it does. Sund responded and said, look, under pressure, people make mistakes and make bad decisions, he said. But you're describing a systematic denial of intelligence and then of support, defense through a whole bunch of different agencies, a whole bunch of different people all reaching the same baffling conclusion that we are not going to protect the Capitol. So, I should mention that Sund actually resigned on January the 7th because Nancy Pelosi, you know, called out a failure of leadership, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and made some critical remarks, and so he resigned. We'll get back to that in a minute. That memo that took away the weapons from the National Guard, in essence, handcuffed them from responding when the Capitol Police later begged for the Guard's assistance. Besides being effectively disarmed, the National Guards were apparently waylaid by decisions made in Congress, specifically by the Capitol Police Board, which has since been overhauled. So on January the 3rd, Sund went to the then House Sergeant at Arms and the then Senate Sergeant at Arms, voting members on the Capitol Police Board, requesting approval, as was required by law, to bring in federal assistance in advance, namely the National Guard. At the time, these individuals reported to Pelosi and McDonald. I was denied twice because of optics, because the intelligence didn't support it. The intelligence that he didn't have. That existed, but he didn't have. So, concerning optics, a military guy said there was absolutely no way he was going to put military personnel on the Capitol for fear of fueling suspicions that he was aiding in a coup, reporting the New York Times. So you got January 6th, Trump has a rally, everybody goes down to the Capitol building. At one point, of course, the protesters start attacking on the west front of the Capitol. So they start trying to get through the gates. As soon as that happened, Sons started asking for assistance. He's calling people. He's saying, look, they're trying to break through the gates. I've got to have extra help. So he talks to the Sergeant of Arms again. Senate, House. They tell him, I'll run it up the chain and I'll get back to you. And that chain would be Nancy Pelosi. He didn't have to do that, according to Sund, but he wouldn't give me the authorization. Mind you, the National Guard had been stationed within eyeshot, whatever. He said they were just over across the way. They had been deployed over there. And if I recall correctly, he actually said at one point trucks came and picked them up and took them someplace else. But there's a National Guard armory just within blocks. So when he calls the Senate Sergeant of Arms, he says, well, you've asked Pelosi's side for help, and they're talking to Pelosi, so we're just going to wait and see what Pelosi says. They finally got approval over an hour later. So the Capitol was basically left undefended. For 71 minutes. And as the title of his book states, They were outnumbered 58-1. Okay, that's a lot of people coming in. And I know there's been some footage of the police trying to kind of just guide people around and leave people alone. And you know, but you can understand if you're outnumbered 58-1, you're not going to be picking many fights. I think by that point, there had already been one of the demonstrators that had been killed, and maybe that sobered things up. So they said the National Guard finally did get there at 6 p.m. And when they got there at 6 p.m., they lined them all up with their riot shields in front of the Capitol. And they took some pictures, and they used those pictures in military magazines. So all this business about optics and, you know, yada, yada, yada. When the National Guard actually did get there, they used it as a photo op. So, they said the really embarrassing thing for some of the National Guard who actually made it, Sun said some of the National Guard were just torqued. They were so mad that they hadn't been allowed to be deployed. And they were really embarrassed because once it looked like the National Guard wasn't going to get anything done, Sun started calling police departments, seeing if he could get anyone to come and help them. And in fact, there were police officers from New Jersey that got there sooner than the Capitol Police. They had to drive from New Jersey to Washington, D.C., responding to the call, and they made it to the Capitol before the National Guard did, when they have an armory just blocks away. Or whatever you call it, where they're stationed. So you look at all this stuff and go, huh, isn't that interesting? You're withholding intelligence. You're hanging the Capitol Police out there to dry. You're not responding to calls for help. What would be the reason for that? And it, you know, you don't have to push too hard to see what maybe the obvious reason might be for it. You know, as Tucker Carlson said, if you were conspiracy minded, you might think that certain agencies concluded there was likely to be chaos at the Capitol and that served their political purposes. And so they let it happen. And they prevented you from stopping it. Now then, what's really fascinating to me about this, when you find out that Pelosi delayed requests for help for over an hour while the rioting was going on, it's really fascinating that the next day she calls this event, she likens it to Pearl Harbor and 9/11. Couldn't get that out. And 9/11, that it's like the worst thing that's ever happened on American soil. But she's the one in charge and of allowing the National Guard to come in, and she doesn't respond for 71 minutes. It's all really, really fascinating. It's just really fascinating. So, does any of this prove anything? I don't know that it proves anything. I mean, the parameters are fairly well defined. Either it's gross negligence, or it's bizarre incompetence, or it's something else. It's politically expedient. And I would sure hate to think that it was the last one. But I have seen enough that I don't find it unlikely that there was a recognition that there was enough emotion that this could really turn into something that could be politically damaging. And to stop it before it got started would mean that it wasn't nearly as politically damaging as it could be. Because the Capitol needed to be breached. There needed to be the availability to call it an insurrection. There needed to be injuries, you know, and wounds so that those could be paraded. And honestly, all of this just fits right into the psychological patterns of the leadership that I have in the Windfall series. It fits right into those patterns where they either allow or create some huge event, blame it on someone else, and then just ride it like crazy to get all of the emotionally manipulative benefit out of it that they can. So it's fascinating to watch. It's just very fascinating to watch. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have finished driving around. Gotta go have dinner with our small group. Have a great weekend.